Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Kreitlow.
Well, here we are, and good morning. It's Tuesday, the 9th of August, Election Day in Wisconsin. Primary contest to determine who will be on the ballot come November. Welcome to Wisconsin's Coffee Break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers is here, or there, wherever the mysterious producer booth is. A producer booth that previously looked like a fire code violation just waiting to happen, but now looks like a fire code violation with artwork. There are things on the wall, photos of microphones, which is not the least bit redundant, Luke. I mean, did you pick these?
I did not, but I just appreciate the efforts being done here in the Solidarity Realty Studios we've got on Madison's Near West Side. I think if it was left up to Mike and I, there wouldn't be a whole lot of anything. And so we've got a great team that's coming together, putting together some artwork and actual decor around the studio and the offices.
Decor is kind of strong there. I mean, and I know Mike Crute, who we haven't introduced to the show yet, but which by the way is not the least bit ironic, A, that he works in radio, and B, that there are pictures of mics behind you now, radio yeah. microphones.
Well, but we might get, you know, like a little on-air light as well.
We're not in danger of being on HGTV anytime soon for the right reasons.
No.
I think we might be on to something here, because I mean, all weekend we have HGTV on and they're renovating this house or that house, you know, and you've seen things like Bar Rescue. Let's go to radio stations, because boys and girls, that's a project.
From the horror stories that I've heard, there are some much worse off stations when it comes to accommodations.
Oh, I've seen where you are in Madison. I stopped in there one time, and that's nice. It used to be some other kind of professional office. We have to talk to, I believe it was Keith Edwards, who co-anchors the news on Channel 18 in Eau Claire. He was my news director when I worked at Wax Radio, WAXX in Eau Claire. Was it him or was it Don Rue, the announcer you just heard? I don't know. I've worked with so many ne'er-do-wells on radio over the years. One of them worked at a radio station where the building was basically in the Horicon Marsh. And you can't then have a sewer system in there because it's a sensitive area. So this was something, I believe the brand name or the nickname was the Destroylet. It was a toilet where it was essentially also an incinerator. You had to push a button to burn the waste in the toilet, and that was part of his job working at the small town radio station. Geez. Was to fire up the Destroylet. I have not been immune from cleaning toilets in past radio stations where I worked, which have been in all manner of, to put it kindly, hell holes. But you know, that's part of their charm. That's part of the charm. The charm as well is the kind of place where, and your workplace might have this too. When I worked for WAQE in Rice Lake, and I don't think they're in that same building anymore. I think they're in the WJMC building. But regardless, my first year out of college in radio, 1986-87, working there, it was one of those where, again, there's no order to the chaos. And you can do what I did, reach into the fridge and reach for what you thought was your container of milk and take a swig right out of the carton because it's yours, right? But the immediate spitting out of chunks of milk told me and told you that was not my container of milk. But nobody cleaned out the fridge in these places because, again, the charm of small town radio.
See, and we had almost the opposite problem for a really long time here. All we had was a mini fridge. And so me being somewhat frugal, I try to bring my lunch to work almost every day. And you'd have to fight over both beer space, water space for any of the guests, and then somehow find a way to cram a lunch in there with several other people trying to do the same. But now we have...
Yeah, you're not going to get that done in the mini fridge, especially if Crute is storing the beer in there.
Well, yeah.
There's never going to be room.
Well, you always, you know, sometimes had to take a beer out, open it up, and, you know, make some space yourself.
But now which takes us right back to the destroylet. You know, it's all part of a circle of life. Later in the show, UW professor Michael Wagner will join us to talk about Election Day, democracy, and journalism's impact on democracy's current and future health. You can reach the show at 715-388-7155. And you can send us questions, comments, scenic photos around Wisconsin, your horror stories of working at a small town radio station. Send all that to radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Again, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Don't forget the WI. We will, of course, later get to the matter that is leading news in 49 other states, that apparently something happened in Florida late yesterday that has been inspirational in terms of internet creativity, everything from memes to comebacks to, you know, whatever else you want to say about Mar-a-Lago and the search warrant that was executed. But naturally, here in Wisconsin, we're going to start with Election Day, and which is why I have my I voted sticker. Luke is indicating that he too has, but without the sticker, forgot the fashion accessory. That's fine. You didn't really vote if you don't have the sticker.
No, but I haven't voted yet. I go after work.
Okay. Well, then that's okay. But yeah, if you need to know where your polling place is, and it may have changed, so go to myvote.wi.gov. Find out what you need. If you can register to vote today. You can become a new voter today in Wisconsin, but you need to bring an ID and proof of address. And we'll go over the, you know, the many races that are being decided and talk about what's at stake come November. But first, we'll come back and talk a little bit more about this primary day and that other thing that happened in Florida. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be back.
If not for you, babe, I couldn't even find the door.
Oh, we're back on a Tuesday morning. This is Up North News. You can get our daily newsletter by signing up at upnorthnewswi.com. Click on newsletter in the top banner. And if you're asking yourself, is he going to play Olivia Newton-John all morning? Of course I am. What are you talking about? Child of the 70s. And you know, basically, it's always weird to say, I won't say rock and roll royalty because there's all these different genres. So we'll say pop music royalty. You know, it's a death in the family that way for everything that Olivia Newton-John did. Although in looking back now last night at her hits and especially through the YouTube videos, you kind of feel bad. She got a bad break in the sense that so many things are so easily dated now. There's a lot of disco era there. There's some, you know, 80s big hair, you know, so it's very easy to say that a lot of those songs and certainly styles, you know, did not stay evergreen. But the fact remains, for, you know, the superstar that she was at the time and for that voice, I mean, my God, that voice, you know, that alone is reason for people to take note of her passing after many years of battling breast cancer so bravely. From the mailbag, Kate Winslow writes, after weeks of listening to the Republican candidates badmouth each other, you can't help but wonder how they're going to suddenly come together after the primaries and support the winner. How do you explain to the voters that all of a sudden their candidate is wonderful? Thanks for the note, Kate. The short answer is you just do, because we've all who've played any role in politics whatsoever realize that. Well, here's the thing. Unlike a certain person whose you know, estate was visited by federal agents yesterday, by and large, you graciously accept the will of the voters when a primary is over. Now, sometimes you have trashed that candidate who is a fellow Democrat or a fellow Republican to the point where that concession and that party unity is not the easiest thing you've ever done. And I'm thinking specifically of Arizona's Governor Ducey, who, you know, went to great lengths to bash Carrie Lake, the Trumper, who ended up winning the Republican gubernatorial primary to succeed him. What did he do? in about within about 48 hours. He put out a tweet. It wasn't highly personal. It said something along the lines of, you know, the work is already beginning to make sure Carrie Lake is our next governor. So not any personal compliments or anything like that, but, you know, getting on board. Conversely, Party Unity, as I told some of you last week, if you're listening, Party Unity is going to be a lot easier for Wisconsin Democrats in the 3rd Congressional District. There are four candidates up today hoping to succeed fellow Democrat, the retiring Congressman Ron Kind. We talked last week to all four candidates, State Senator Brad Paff, Rebecca Cook, Mark Newman, and Deb Baldus McGrath. All made their case, and I would have a tough time believing that the three candidates who don't win today are going to just go away. They understand the threat posed by having Derek Van Orden be the presumptive Republican nominee and having somebody represent Wisconsin in Congress who is quite blatantly pro-insurrection and frankly has just been a troll in so many other ways through his conduct both online and in person. And yet, so much money is going to be poured into supporting Derek Van Orden, propping him up, making him look like a legitimate leader rather than, you know, our version of Marjorie Taylor Greene, which is what I'm quite certain he aspires to. And so there's going to be a lot of messaging out there that tries to make him to be something that he isn't. In much the same way, as I mentioned yesterday about the Republican Governors Association running ads against Tony Evers, you know, featuring a whole bunch of angry white people going crime and saying other things like crime, and who can forget their other greatest hit, crime. That's just the message that outside groups will use, even though crime is not a major issue in Wisconsin, certainly not for Wisconsin voters. But that's what happens when outside groups come in and try to do anything they can to tear down the other side and prop up their side. And, you know, Luke, that's an unfortunate part of politics after the primary.
Yeah. And the interesting aspect will be as well that for roughly the last 6 months, I feel like it's been maybe a little bit shorter than that. We've been hearing that inflation is the number one issue. Inflation. And you just had 50 Republican senators vote against the Inflation Reduction Act on Sunday. And I think it's going to be really interesting to find out the crime ads versus the ads that I expect are coming after the Inflation Reduction Act passes the House, hopefully later this week, of the ads they're going to create saying Republicans are voting against the Inflation Reduction Act.
Well, and it depends. You know, everything is poll tested, to a fault. And it's a matter of what appears to test well. And so if an inflation message is testing well, they'll go with that. If it's a crime message, they'll go with that. I also happen to think that if inflation does start to show signs of receding, the message will simply shift to government spending. You know, that, you know, there's all this government spending that's going on. Yeah, the thing that, you know, propped up an economy, prevented, you know, economic collapse during the pandemic and is aiding in the economic recovery. But for now, we don't know what message is going to be used by the nominee against Tony Evers, because we don't know who the nominee will be. The most recent polling came from Emerson College of Massachusetts. They did a survey last week, August 3rd through the 5th. Let's see, margin of error was 3 percentage points as they interviewed 900 likely Wisconsin Republican primary voters. And the interesting thing is that while they were essentially tied in a statistical tie, Lee Fish at 36 and Tim Michaels at 34, the executive director of the Emerson College polling, Spencer Kimball, said there is a very clear regional divide among Wisconsin Republican voters. And we have suspected as much. We've certainly seen it in other elections. This poll showed that it still exists as well. When you look at suburban Wisconsin voters versus rural voters, when it comes to suburban Wisconsin voters who are likely Republican primary voters, Rebecca Clefish has a 21-point lead by 15 points. And so it's clear that they appeal to different groups, suburban Republicans versus rural Republicans. And then what each campaign has get just a few more of the people who are already liking you and just convince a few more people to show up and vote? Or do you take the extra time and the extra resources and go try to appeal to a few of those people in the other camp? Does Michaels try to get a few more rural votes, or does he try to pick up some more suburban support in these final days of the campaign? Of those Republican voters surveyed, nearly 40% said that Donald Trump's endorsement of Michaels makes them more likely to support a candidate, and but another 50% said it really doesn't make any difference to them. Oh, by the way, just in case you're going, are these really Republican primary voters? 93% of the Republican voters surveyed disapprove of the job Joe Biden is doing as president. To me, the bigger thing is that 5% say they approve of the job Joe Biden is doing. But by the same token, let's remember 6% said they're still supporting Kevin Nicholson, even though he dropped out of the race a couple of weeks ago.
I saw there were some right-wing pundits here in the state of Wisconsin that were bemoaning this poll. And I don't know if they were pro Michaels or pro Clayfish, saying like which one would be benefiting from Nicholson as numbers still being in there, but essentially being like, oh, you can't trust this poll. You got to throw it completely out because they're still surveying voters on whether or not they want to vote for Nicholson. And the truth of the matter is the guy's on the ballot. His name will be there. And right. So he will pull some votes. Whether or not he pulls 9%, I think is probably unlikely, but he's definitely going to get some votes today in the primary.
Oh, as will Sarah Godlewski and, Tom Nelson, and Alex Lazary, everybody that was hoping to be the Senate nominee. But instead it will be Mandela Barnes. But yeah, Mandela Barnes is not going to get, 100% of the vote. And, you have to wonder with every one of them, is it that somebody legitimately didn't know that Alex Lazary had dropped out? And so, I like the guy, I want to support him. Or is it more of a protest vote? They're with Alex, they're ride or die with him, or Godlewski or Nelson. You don't know. I would just refer back to what political analyst Joe Zepecki told us yesterday. Don't play games in the voting booth. Don't guess. If you're a Democrat, don't vote in the Republican primary because you want to tinker with it, because you have no idea, whether Michaels or Clefish would be the better candidate. Instead, if you're a Democratic voter, yeah, the U.S. Senate primary is all but done. But there are still how many candidates running for lieutenant governor? There are two candidates running to succeed Mandela Barnes as lieutenant governor. There are two candidates running in the Democratic primary for Secretary of State. Doug La Follette has a primary challenger. And of course, with Sarah Godlewski stepping aside, there are three Democratic candidates for state treasurer, not to mention the third congressional district primary. If you are a Republican voter, you don't want to monkey around with any other races, because again, you have enough to do. There are 8 Republicans running for lieutenant governor. In other words, neither Clefish nor Michaels know who their running mate is going to be yet, and won't until the voting is done. There are 3 candidates in the Republican primary for state attorney general. One of them will challenge Josh Call in November. And then again, there are 3 Republicans running for Secretary of State. And we'll have more to say about that primary a little bit later on. Secretary of State, Doug La Follette has been Secretary of State for the better part of 300 years. And, it has been an office that has been reduced to very little, and yet Republicans want to turn it into something else. There are 2 Republicans running for state treasurer as well. And then there are also some legislative primaries in a few districts, not many. And you know, there are some that, you know, just aren't going to go anywhere. In the second congressional district, which is Democrat Mark Buchanan, and then the fourth congressional district, which is Gwen Moore, you know, there are Republican primaries there. But again, the way these districts are drawn, it's not the winner there is going to get, you know, a lot of traction. The one legislative primary people will be watching is in Robin Voss's legislative district, the 63rd Assembly District, where the Assembly Speaker is facing a challenge from somebody upset that Voss didn't illegally try to decertify the 2020 election results. It's even led to an event last evening called the Toss Voss event, which involved a slingshot and mannequins that we'll probably get into a little bit later on as well. But this is a good time to take a break and to tell you the forecast. It's going to be gorgeous today. That's all you need to know. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be right back.
Wisconsin Conversation. Real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
I was just looking at the little bulletin coming across the sports wire. Serena Williams.
Sorry, that was apparently a late start to the Olivia Newton-John song I pulled.
I guess so. It's okay. We will always make room for Olivia. As I think I was saying, just looking at the breaking news from the sports world, Serena Williams saying that after the U.S. Open, she will evolve away from tennis. People can't even say retire these days. You know, she will evolve away from tennis. So good luck to her. I mean, did you see what was the movie about Venus and Serena's dad, Will Smith?
King played? Richard. I did not
King
see
Richard.
It. I did not see it, though.
Obviously, this was pre-Oscar slap, but surprisingly good movie. I was not sure what to expect, and I was very impressed by that.
Well, it was the reason that Will Smith was at the Oscars. It was, I believe, right. That performance is what was receiving accolades that evening when that happened. So
yeah, and it was such a good movie, and now it's like I don't even want to see the guy. But you know, that's my problem, not yours. Sports closer to home, the Brewers had the day off yesterday. They begin a 2-game series at American Family Field with the Tampa Bay Rays. Freddy Peralta will be pitching for the Brewers this evening at 7:10, and then they play again tomorrow afternoon. And I'm thankful that is at American Family Field, because I have been to the Tampa Bay Rays ballpark, and it's a dump. Is it still called Tropicana Field? I don't even know, but people, having been to the Metrodome many a time, the Metrodome was not ideal, but I mean, playing it at that, it was a tin can. It really was like playing in a can of tuna in Tampa.
I believe it's still Tropicana Field, but I don't think that they've gotten the stadium improvements that Miami has gotten, because I believe there's like hot tubs and fish tanks and stuff down at forget what Miami calls theirs, but they have a very state-of-the-art facility for the Marlins.
No doubt. Whereas in St. Petersburg, which is where this thing is, I happen to be down there for a conference or something like that, and had the evening free. And of course, being the big baseball fan I was and am, would go wherever I could to see another ballpark, and immediately regretted my choice. But at least I can say that I saw it. Got to smell it. It's a rather musty place. But the last time the Brewers were there, and I don't have the schedule in front of me, but several weeks back, was one of the craziest games, because there were three, four different balls that were judged fair or foul by how they hit the catwalks that, you know, go along the roof of Tropicana Field. It's you know, that's pinball. That is no way to play baseball. And you know, I don't have anything against Tampa St. Pete. If they could get a decent ballpark, that would be fine. But boy, does that thing need to go. But while we're on the subject of things involving Florida, let's go ahead and tackle the big story from late yesterday. And that is, you know, federal agents that were, you know, sent to the estate of the ex-president, and what they call a raid. It's not a raid if you're executing a search warrant. It went through all the hoops of, you know, going to an independent judge, everything else.
I believe it was court ordered as well. It wasn't even just like the DOJ wanted to do it. It sounds from my interpretation of the news stories, because I didn't see it until late last night. Like I was doing many other things yesterday evening, and then I opened up the Twitter and saw this story was breaking, and like you said, all the memes and whatnot. But it sounds like the National Archives wanted the documents that Trump left the White House with, and they asked several different times, and then the National Archives took them to court, and it was a court-ordered search and seizure.
In much the same way that Al Capone was finally caught for tax evasion, if this is a case of Donald Trump finally having justice done through the National Archivists, the lesson in both cases is clear. Don't mess with the nerds. The nerds will get you in time. And in this
clerical
case,
clerical errors.
And the thing about these documents, okay, this was not, these were not like, you know, little journal entries and, you know, sweet little notes from, you know, North Korean dictators. You know, there are real and vital sensitive documents that have to stay closely protected, which is never going to happen in the tiny hands of the 45th president, who had a tough time understanding that the presidency, much like the country, belongs to the people and not to a person, not to any one person. Where you really saw that early on in Trump's presidency was in the way that he treated the U.S. Attorney General as if it were his attorney, and it's not. The Attorney General is the attorney for the United States government and has a measure of independence from the presidency, at least in a non-corrupt presidency. The same can be said about documents. Again, not happy little notes, but, you know, the daily briefings that involve national security, you know, things like that. Those records are not yours personally. If you are the president, they belong to the country. This was borne out after Watergate when Nixon was looking to have some records destroyed. So Congress, Republicans and Democrats, remember there was honor back then, you know, came together and made sure that sensitive records had proper security on them. And Donald Trump had already laid out the precedent that he could not be trusted, that he has been a national security threat since January 20th, 2017, the moment he walked in. It has been documented the way that he has provided what should have been classified information, to others, because he is a loose cannon. He cannot be trusted. And worse, he may be worse than a loose cannon, whether he's an asset or simply a tool. We'll never know, because, to go off on a slight tangent here, we still have not seen Donald Trump's taxes. We still don't know his foreign debts and obligations. We don't know if there is any leverage from Russia or others over him. And so going back to 2016, the man never deserved a vote from any American because of that lack of transparency, that we don't know if we can trust you. And so whether he is, you know, being used, or whether he is a willing accomplice in what some foreign entity might be doing, we don't know. So there were these, 15 boxes of documents that he took from the White House down to Mar-a-Lago. It's one thing to have it. Having it, these documents, is one thing. Doing something with them is another. And again, we're getting into conjecture here, but there had to be some evidence of some kind of activity for a judge to give their okay on search warrants. We don't know what information is in there. We don't know if information was being shared, if information was being sold, if there was simply the implied possibility of it. But again, these are not innocent pieces of paper gathering dust in a room in Mar-a-Lago where, you know, they hang coats. It just doesn't work that way. So you have now, unfortunately, the reaction to it. And the reaction, I mean, the reaction from Trump is expected. You know, he's a victim. You know, he's a victim, and this gets him some more attention, and that's fine. But the reaction from Trump supporting Republicans has been, you know, beyond shameful, you know, beyond distressing to Americans who believe in the rule of law. For just one example, let's see if I can find the one from, here's one from the senator from Florida, Marco Rubio. Pardon me, I need a drink of water for a second here. There's my Marco Rubio humor for the day, where Rubio said last evening, using government power to persecute political opponents is something we see in third world Marxist dictatorships, but never before in America. Thankfully, Twitter doesn't die. And so the tweet from 2016 is from Marco Rubio is, the FBI's decision regarding Hillary Clinton's mishandling of classified emails once again proves she is disqualified from being commander in chief. You have other House Republicans saying, you know, if the FBI can do this to a former president, they can do it to you, which reminds us, yeah, the fact that the law applies to the president, just like all the rest of us, is a feature of democracy, not a bug, as was pointed out on Twitter. And, you know, the Republicans continue to show that when the rule of law is applied equally, they're not happy about it. But that really just gets us back to the notion of an entire political class that is, in essence, they're apologists for both a criminal class and for things like corporate misbehavior. I come back to the comments I made yesterday about the Inflation Reduction Act and a minimum 15% corporate income tax, so that there is a sense of fairness. And you immediately had a group on the right saying this is a terrible thing, this tax fairness, because corporations will just pass all of it on. And while we already know that's not true, the larger issue for me is, why are you making excuses for somebody jacking up your prices in order for them to be required to pay their fair share for the resources they use, for the roads that they use, for, you know, for the you know, the workforce that they bring on and have to treat decently? To be an apologist for this shows that disconnect of people who don't understand that a certain group of politicians and a certain group of the corporate class, they're not there for you. They're using you. When you repeat their talking points about government waste, you are the waste that they're talking about. I would reference back to my story about passenger rail in Western Wisconsin and how, you know, a couple of days after Scott Walker got elected in 2010, somebody with the Passenger Rail Commission said, I supported Walker. I never thought that he would come after passenger rail. You're the waste they're talking about when they're looking for any degree of power and any degree of public support. So here we are back to Trump, people apologizing for him, people like Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader, who again is already, you know, measuring the, you know, the windows for drapes in the majority leader's office, in the speaker's office, assuming that Republicans are going to take control this November, already promising to investigate Merrick Garland, the attorney general, over this. Well, that's hardly a surprise. I mean, aren't we expecting, Luke, that if Republicans take the House, Congress would come into session January 3rd of 2023. Can we assume they'd at least wait 24 hours and Joe Biden would be impeached on January 4th, 2023?
I have a feeling it would probably be within that first 24 hours. I believe that they would be whipping those votes and floating those articles immediately. On what grounds? Whatever they feel like. But yeah, they're going to have those pretty quick.
Yeah. And so we already know what things are going to look like if a Derek Van Orden is in the majority of the House of Representatives. And here's what it will not involve. It will not involve actually fighting inflation. It will not involve, you know, actually doing something about tax fairness. It will not have something to do with fighting COVID, because we've already seen, you know, the apologists and the deniers for, you know, the spread of COVID across the state. You'll see the attacks on, you know, continued attacks on abortion rights, contraceptive rights, gay marriage, just an entire, you know, rise of extremism is what we're going to get. So if something is going to come of this Mar-a-Lago search warrant, it's going to have to happen before January 3rd, because otherwise, much like the plans for passenger rail in Wisconsin, they can be derailed by just one election. We'll take this break, wrap up our hour's discussion after this. You're up north. As we were talking about elections going on, I wanted to come back to one of the primaries in Wisconsin today is for Secretary of State. Doug LaFollette has been Secretary of State for quite some time. He is facing a primary challenger on the Democratic side, and there are multiple candidates on the Republican side as well. This is not something that we talk about in Wisconsin very much. In fact, many people would probably be surprised to hear that we have a Secretary of State role in Wisconsin. Secretary of State used to be a much more important title nationally as well. In the early days of the country, the Secretary of State was essentially seen as the vice president. I mean, they were the, you know, they served as the country's emissary, you know, around the world, if they had to get on a ship and travel overseas and things like that. And at the state level, you know, Secretary of State had it's a constitutional role. It was set up when the state was founded. So it's not something they can scrap. But Republicans have over the years greatly diminished the office and taken away its responsibilities. But what politicians taketh away, they can giveth when it serves them. And certainly, thanks to the attacks on American democracy from, you know, election deniers dating back to the 2020 campaign, it is quite possible that in multiple states, Wisconsin included, this once sleepy condition, sleepy position, could suddenly have immense power over state elections, meaning state election results, state certification, whether a Secretary of State will, you know, serve their proper legal function to all the people, or simply serve as a puppet of the party they belong to. So the candidates on the Wisconsin Republican side of the Secretary of State primary have all stated publicly that they want the Wisconsin Secretary of State to have a greater role in election administration. State Representative Amy Loudenbeck, said that the office should, quote, serve as a check to the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Jay Schrader, a NENA businessman, said he supports legislation to dissolve the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Justin Schmidka has demanded that the State Elections Commission be dismantled, and he shared Donald Trump's press release back in the day, falsely claiming that the election was stolen. And again, this is not just something in Wisconsin. Party's primaries in Arizona, there's one in Minnesota today, where, again, if Republicans control the legislature, and I should hasten to add, if they defeat Tony Evers in Wisconsin and control the governor's office, they could then turn that very quiet role into something much more. David Becker is a former U.S. Justice Department attorney. He heads the Center for Election Innovation and Research, and he says quite clearly, this is not about policy. This is about election outcomes, and only about election outcomes. So there are also primaries in Connecticut and Vermont. The leading Minnesota Republican candidate continues to say the 2020 election was rigged. Meanwhile, in Wisconsin, you're not hearing as much about it yet. But if Doug LaFollette, the incumbent, comes out of the primary, he's not exactly coming out with a great big war chest to take on whichever Republican will emerge today and challenge him come November. In his most recent campaign finance report, Doug LaFollette raised $21,000. That's nothing. I mean, that's almost literally nothing in politics. And so whichever Democrat comes out of today's primary, there aren't going to be a lot of resources. It will take that outside effort, a national effort, to defend the Wisconsin Secretary of State's office, along with, you know, Governor Evers, from this takeover that would otherwise has all but promised to dismantle the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which, by the way, was created by Republicans. Again, the Wisconsin Elections Commission was created by Republicans. What do you mean? Wait, they're slamming the Elections Commission. Why? They created it. They created it because its predecessor, the Government Accountability Board, which was something that I helped create, being in the legislature in 2007, was doing its job too well, made up of independent retired judges. It was getting awfully close to what Scott Walker's campaign was doing, which was allegedly violating campaign collusion laws, essentially. There had been, and in some cases in name only, there continue to be laws where candidates and campaigns cannot directly communicate with and collude with, political action committees and other groups. But it has become such a wink, wink, nudge, nudge world out there that, you can forgive voters if they think that, nobody actually investigates and prosecutes this type of behavior. But that's exactly what was happening in Wisconsin. And the Government Accountability Board reportedly was getting mighty close to showing how the Walker campaign was breaking the law. The Republicans running the legislature, and of course, Scott Walker was governor at the time, decided to disband the Government Accountability Board and create instead a Wisconsin Elections Commission, which was designed to have gridlock. Gridlock is not a bug. It's a feature of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. By having three Republican members and three Democratic members, they were seeking and certainly have received a number of tie votes, 3-3, that have prevented the Wisconsin Elections Commission from getting things done. But, and now we get back to that whole notion of honor again, there are still many Republicans with honor, Republicans who serve in positions of public trust. And there have been enough times with either a 5-1 vote or a 6-0 vote by the Wisconsin Elections Commission to enforce the law that you have Republican politicians now claiming that the Wisconsin Elections Commission is broke and has to be dismantled. So how do you take care of a matter that had six people in charge and sometimes wasn't doing the thing that you wanted it to do? You replace it with one person and you give those powers to a Secretary of State. And that's what is what could happen in Wisconsin and in other states, as we talked to reporters from other states last week. And obviously it won't happen everywhere, but there's a very good chance that in at least one state, when the 2024 presidential election results come in, you may have a Secretary of State, a constitutional officer, standing in the schoolhouse door and preventing the certification of a free and fair election. Now, there may be other safeguards built in that could get around that, but do we really want to take that chance and have that kind of chaos? Or do we just want to ensure that the Secretary of State's office is kept in trustworthy hands? In our next hour, UW Professor Michael Wagner joins us to talk about Election Day and democracy. You're up north.